Welcome back to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and our guest today is Tim Rhyme. He's Director of Communications and Outreach at the Alliance for Natural Health. ANH-USA.org is their website. And we're talking about the role that the Alliance plays in safeguarding your access, you as a citizen, to therapies and products of your choice. In part one, we covered the mission statement of ANH. We also talked about a new government initiative to shut down compounding pharmacies. Compounding pharmacies are a way that we can get custom medications, natural hormones, and IV materials, intravenous ingredients that we use for things like Myers cocktail, high-dose intravenous vitamin C, and chelation therapy. If the government were to have its way, we might find ourselves someday not having access to these valuable therapies. ANH is battling to keep the channels open in terms of our access to these therapies. So, Tim, I'm looking at the website, ANH-USA.org, and you have a host of great stories there. You, as Director of Communications and Outreach, you have a hand in vetting these stories and preparing them. One of the most fascinating stories in this week's issue of what's called the Pulse of Natural Health, that's your newsletter, medical student launches campaign against Dr. Oz. I talked about this on the weekend edition of Intelligent Medicine, but give us your take on that.
Well, it's a very interesting story that a second or third year, I think, medical student was able to go and solicit and actually be heard and from the Medical Society of the State of New York, an organization I know you're familiar with, as well as the American Medical Association. And essentially what this med student was requesting was for the AMA and the MSSNY to censure Dr. Oz and to begin to regulate the speech of so-called celebrity doctors, you know, like Dr. Oz, like Dr. Hoffman.
Exactly. I'm getting a little worried this guy's going to latch on to me. I'm a little lower profile than Dr. Oz, but hey, you know, I might be next.
It's an interesting case. I mean, if you read his rationale for why Dr. Oz and other celebrity doctors are a public menace, the criteria that he uses is just chock full of inaccuracies, and I think it demonstrates sort of the lack of understanding that I think a lot of medical students that are being brought through the system currently have about nutrition. I mean, they just don't understand nutrition and how it works and its role in, you know, proper body health. But beyond the fact that, you know, his argument doesn't really hold water in terms of the science, it doesn't really hold water in terms of the Constitution either. I mean, we're really
exactly. We are a country where I believe there's this little impediment to what his plans might be. It's called the First Amendment.
Yeah, and the First Amendment is being assaulted, particularly in this area of our culture right now. And I think this is a good example of how it is being. I mean, essentially, what he's asking is that doctors that do not toe the line in terms of, you know, specific courses of treatment that look outside the box, that they would be open to censure by these organizations. Mm-hmm. It's kind of chilling. It's, you know, an obvious violation of free speech. And, you know, the AMA did opt not to censure Dr. Oz. But it does, I think, show a mentality that has developed. And, you know, certainly Dr. Oz is being attacked right now from a number of fronts. This is the latest, but certainly not the loudest that we've heard as of late.
You know, and you know, let me just state for the record that I don't agree wholeheartedly with everything that Dr. Oz says. I mean, he's under the pressure of churning out really amazing, headline-grabbing, cutting-edge stuff on a daily basis. And sometimes I think he overreaches in naming this or that or the other thing as some kind of magical weight loss panacea. It drives holistic doctor is really crazy because people come into our offices and they say, well, what about this? What about that? I heard about it on Dr. Oz. And so I get it that doctors are sometimes, especially conventional doctors, might be peeved because he brings holistic experts on and they say, well, you know, you can take a drug-free approach to this or that or the other problem. And that might erode patients' confidence in their doctors. That's what this third-year medical student is saying. But, you know, they tried this out once before. It was in the 1500s. It was called the Inquisition, and it didn't end well. You know, you had people who overturned the theory that the universe revolved around the Earth, and that it was actually the Earth that revolved around the Sun and with the rest of the planets. Copernicus and Galileo were subject to the same kind of censorship. They were actually placed under house arrest under threat of excommunication from the church because their ideas were too far out. And yet that's how scientific progress advances, you know, through dialogue and through challenge and through controversy. And ultimately, the truth will out.
Yeah, and I mean, certainly I think we've seen sort of that inquisitive-like environment very, very recently in relation to Dr. Oz. I mean, if I don't know if you were following the, you know, Senate subcommittee.
Yes, indeed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I mean, they're following up on the FTC crackdown on the fake diet products, which, you know, rightly so. You know, there's some stuff out there that should not be out there. And Dr. Oz, as you mentioned, was a bit superfluous in terms of the language he was using in supporting some of these products. And, you know, so as a result of what, because Dr. Oz at a certain level becomes associated with the movement as a whole, you know, because he does play such a prominent role. So when he is brought before Congress and slapped on the wrist, it, you know, creates an environment where a lot of other criticisms start to creep into sort of that main thing, which was really about a diet product, right? I mean, that was the whole thing was about a sham diet product. But now, because of this sort of the Inquisition atmosphere that's created around this, this has become an umbrella for an attack on supplements as a whole.
But, you know, I think one point to be made is, you know, this kid is a third year medical student. He's probably about 22 years old. And there is a term for this. The term is sophomoric. Actually, a sophomore is a second year, but he's a third year, so he's literally a junior in the four-year program of med school. But a sophomoric attitude is an attitude that is arrogant and self-assured, but comes from a wider ignorance about the possibilities that are out there. And you know, there is a hubris. There's a certain lack of perspective sometimes that medical students have because they're taught this dogma. Literally, they're inculcated with this set of medical facts that they then have to go out into the world and often find that the facts that they were indoctrinated with may not work in the real world, and they have to be open-minded and adapt to circumstances. And that's actually sometimes how doctors who are start out conventional wind up becoming complementary physicians because they're disappointed in the outcomes when they adhere to mainstream rules about surgery and drugs.
Yeah, and I think, you know, and we can certainly hope that Benjamin Mazur, as he enters the real world, he, you know, gains wisdom and is able to expand his viewpoint a little bit. But I think that this points to, you know, because regardless if he is a, you know, somebody who may not understand the issue as well as he thinks he does, he got press out of it. And what we saw, you know, after sort of this whole Dr. Oz debacle is that the press took all of this negativity, you know, surrounding the Senate subcommittee and, you know, then I think it was Claire McCaskill chastising him on national TV and ran with it. And, you know, you saw all the major networks talking about and when they speak about these things, you know, it's always about supplementation, you know,
they're painting it with a broad brush stroke. And, you know, absolutely. And, you know, frankly, I don't think that raspberry ketones and, you know, green coffee beans represent the apex of nutritional science. And, you know, to damn the whole field on the basis of some outsized claims for weight loss Obviously that's ridiculous, and that's what you point out in your article. So let's move on to some of the other topics that are covered in this week's Pulse of Natural Health that you can get if you go to anh-usa.org, or you can subscribe to the newsletter. There's a box where you can put in your email, and you can subscribe for free, and you'll get it on a weekly basis. Well, this week is a very interesting week. Large study adds to evidence that organic food is superior. Whoa, what's up with that?
There's a shocker, huh?
Yeah, right.
So this stuff, because that is the argument that that we get a lot is that, you know, you want to spend extra on your food.
It's all a scam, organic, schmorganic.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, and this study.
This is actually the topic of a newsletter article that I wrote for our newsletter this week.
Okay. So were you looking at the same study?
Absolutely, yeah. I think you've vetted it out pretty well, is that this has been a controversy because there have been previous studies that are sort of, you know, the study's been going back and forth, as you know. They have, in some cases, said, yes, there is a benefit. Virtually all studies agree that you're going to get less pesticides, so that in itself is a benefit. But some studies have pointed to the nutritional equivalence of natural or organic products versus conventional. But this study was a resounding affirmation of the nutritional superiority of organic products. Correct?
Absolutely correct. And, you know, I think that it's one of those things that people have known for years. But we've been sort of been drowned out by sort of this cacophony that comes from, you know, big agro and big food that, you know, says, no, this is not the way we want to go with the industry. We want to industrialize our food complex. And, you know, an organic industry sort of is a difficult industry to industrialize. You know, you're not going to be able to maximize yields and all of this stuff in limited spaces and use CAFOs and maintain the integrity of an organic product.
I call it plants on steroids.
That's exactly right. Yeah. And so I think this is this study, while it might not have surprised any of us, I think it's a fantastic, something fantastic that we can all point to and say, look, you know, this is the reality. Yeah. Regardless of all the negative PR that these big industrial producers are able to put out, the reality is this is better for our world. It's better for people. You know, you're getting more nutrition, you're getting less pesticides, you're doing less damage to the environment. Buy organic. It's the right thing to do. It's the moral thing to do. And so, we were certainly thrilled with the evidence provided by this study, and certainly want to disseminate that information as widely as possible because it's one of our core values. We believe that organic is the right thing to do.
And when you say disseminate as widely as possible, how many people are subscribing and how many people belong to ANH and how many people click on your website? You know the statistics, I think.
We currently we have about 325,000
wow.
subscribers. Yeah, so and we're really in a period of rapid growth right now. You know, I think we've grown by about 30% in the last year alone, and I don't think it's anything that we're doing necessarily, but I think it's that people are becoming more aware of what the threats to their health are, and they're looking for answers. They're looking for real science. They're looking for people that are actually looking out for their interest and aren't, you know, being paid to propagate information by big pharma and big agro and all of these corporate interests. So, you know, I think there's a change perceptually in our country, and that people are more open to this sort of thing, and that they're seeing the truth. I mean, we have a country that gets sicker and sicker despite dumping more and more money into medicine. And so people want real answers. They don't want to treat the symptoms anymore. They want to look for the cure. And, you know, natural health is the cure for what ails them.
Well, that is very well said. Share with us one more cause action point on the Pulse of Natural Health this week's issue, which is a fascinating one. I haven't shared this issue with my audience yet. What if the government standardized all medical testing? What's up with that?
Well, I know you can probably come, as a doctor, you can come up with better examples than I can. But, I mean, for instance, you know, there are, is some evidence about, you know, breast cancer, the way we do screenings for breast cancer, that there are other ways besides mammograms that may be more effective. And, you know, the problem when you start standardizing anything is that it cuts down on innovation, it cuts down on choice, and it does not improve the standards of care. But, you know, I think what we live in an environment right now, because medicine costs so much money in this country, that, you know, we're looking for answers. How do we save money? How do we make it cheaper?
And there's a cost containment element to this, I think, too, when they say you can't have this test, you can't have the other test. I mean, maybe that's part of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think a lot of it has to do with who benefits financially. You know, the problem with the government standardizing anything, and I don't care if it's medical test, I don't care what you're talking about, is that the government is so influenced by money that whoever has the money is going to get that standard applied to their industry. So if I have a lot of money and I think that, you know, GMOs are great and I'm going to make money from GMOs, If I can get a standard within the system, that standard's going to benefit me. The government has become sort of a gatekeeper for corporate America to pass legislation that benefits corporate America. And I think that's true.
In other words, if you're a big laboratory entity and you develop a test and you have the proper lobbyists and schmoozers in Washington to get your test approved, you'll get your test approved. But a small fry who develops a new innovative test, say for Lyme disease, isn't going to, I mean, they'll be overwhelmed by costs and obstacles and regulatory strictures, and they just will give up before the public can be the beneficiary.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is the thing. I mean, this is a broader culture, I think, that we see right now within the government regulatory environment. In that, with all of these different standardizations, when the government starts to impose more and more of a regulatory voice in these things, we lose as consumers. You know, a good example, and we just did a story about this not too long ago, are the nutritional labels that, you know, the FDA has just released. And it's something that we're actually fighting right now because there are provisions within these new nutritional labels that limit choice. As the government gets more and more into sort of this uniform standardized mentality, we lose more and more options as consumers, and have less of a voice in how we choose to care for our bodies.
Well, let me tell you, you know, how particularly this may affect consumers, the standardization of lab tests. Currently, I offer tests in my office for Candida. Candida being a phenomenon which I think is very important, but it's controversial, and mainstream medicine doesn't recognize it as being important. It's likely that if a new edict, federal regulations were to come down from Washington, that they would say, no, you can't test your patients for Candida. Or alternatively, there are certain allergy tests that I use that I find very valuable may not be considered mainstream or accepted by the American Academy of Allergy and Immunology, the mainstream organization of allergists who believe in one way of looking at allergy, and thus denying my patients an opportunity to get tested utilizing these types of tests. And, you know, and on it goes. It may apply to Lyme disease. It may apply to measurements of certain antioxidants. I use some very innovative tests sometimes with patients. Genetic tests, I think, is another example where we might want to do genetic testing to help counsel patients. And with a heavy hand of government regulation, we may winnow it down so there's just far fewer testing options for patients who want to get a handle on their challenging medical conditions.
Yeah, and I mean, I think this goes, you know, hand in hand with what we were talking about earlier with the compounding pharmacies. I mean, the more that we limit doctors' ability to treat patients as individuals, to come up with innovative strategies to deal with disease conditions, the more of a disservice we're doing to our citizens. And I think this is just yet another example of mentality that we've taken on, and that you know, somehow the government has to mandate all of these things, that the years and years of experience that doctors have and their time in, you know, going through school and treating people counts less, that the government somehow knows better than mm-hmm. than doctors do.
Yeah, we're really at the mercy of bureaucrats. Here in New York, one of the big problems is that we don't have the ability to test our patients for the vast majority of environmental toxins that they could be exposed to, because New York has its own bureaucratic infrastructure, which imposes restrictions on testing for common chemicals that patients might be exposed to. However, in 49 out of 50 states, you can test for those chemicals, but perhaps those will lapse as well with more intense government regulation of tests, because they're probably going to say, look, we don't want to share with Americans how toxic they are, because then people would want to do something about that. They might require stricter environmental regulations, avoid eating non-organic foods, and this would be disastrous for the economy.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right on that, and it's something that I think we all have to stand up against. I mean, you know, we as an organization, we do this on a daily basis, but this affects real people and real people's lives. I mean, it's one thing to read an article in the newspaper, but the day that you have a condition and you go to a doctor to seek treatment and suddenly the government has said, hey, I'm sorry, that is no longer available, then it starts to affect us individually. And, you know, so I think it's important that we all stand up. That's why we're an advocacy group, and that's why we push this message out to as many people as we can, and we ask them to get involved. It's not just us going up and lobbying and you know, doing public relations work and all of these things. It's getting people involved. It's getting people to reach out to the regulatory agencies, to their representatives in government, and to say, hey, look, we care about these issues because they affect us. That's the important part of what we do, and why this is such an important thing, and why I'm thankful that we have doctors like you who are out there preaching the word about this stuff.
Well, thank you, Tim. And full disclosure, I'm particularly interested in the ANH, the Alliance for Natural Health, because I serve as a board member and advisor to the Alliance for Natural Health, and so I'm very plugged into their initiatives. And I encourage you to become aware of ANH. Go to anh-usa.org. That's today's Intelligent Medicine call to action. Check it out. Bookmark that page. Subscribe to the newsletter. And, if you really feel that this is an important part of your life and lifestyle and you want to safeguard it, contribute something, you know, whatever level you feel comfortable with, because ANH relies on voluntary donations. It's not, we don't get government grants, that's for sure.
Yeah, and thank goodness for that, because our hands aren't tied because of it. So we definitely depend on our supporters, and we're grateful to all of them out there.
Okay, great. Tim, thank you very much. Anything you want to add to our discussion?
I'm thankful for the opportunity to come on and to talk to your listeners, and thankful for you, Dr. Hoffman, and the role that you play in supporting ANH. And just thank you for that.
Great. Well, we'll look to you for frequent updates on what's happening on the political scene. You're our go-to guy. Keep up the great work, Tim.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks for joining us. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.